Here we go. It's a beautiful thing. All of us in this space together, I am reminded of the moment Brother Malcolm, that's Malcolm X, was approached by a young, well-intended white woman who came to a black Muslim restaurant. And she asked Brother Malcolm, "What can I do?" And Malcolm replied, "Nothing." Nothing. Or as the old folks would say, nothing. And the woman left in tears. But you see, after his awakening in Mecca, Malcolm thought about that moment and similar moments long and hard. And in his interview with Gordon Parks of Life magazine, Malcolm mentioned that incident in particular. And he said, "I have lived to regret that incident. In many parts of the African continent, I saw both white and black students helping each other. Something like this," he said, "helping one another kills a lot of arguments." So I am persuaded today that if there was a time we needed each other as a human community, yes, it is now in the era of Trumpism. Yes. Yes. I say Trumpism to focus my sights not on the one man, but on the practice of uncritical adherence to a worldview and policies that repeatedly harm the most vulnerable in our society. Will you pray with me? God, we thank you for community, the beauty of difference that brings us to the single mission of Jesus. We thank you that as a community, we have the opportunity to be better human beings, to act just, to stand courageous, and to speak truth and wisdom to power. Speak, God. We are listening. We will act. We will stand. Not for the gospel, but God as the gospel. In Jesus' name, amen.
My life, not done. And yours just a start. And I ain't gonna live so long time to see what become of all you Negro people who are free.
We gonna be watching from heaven then, huh?
No, I ain't gonna be watching from no heaven while soil they still here for me for planting. We done took old gods and give new names. They saw it all here that day, those eagles. This hand, they from me, from them, from us. Same so as you are me. Come, children, kiss this hand full of me.
Lord, have mercy, have mercy.
Take my hand. I didn't want what could give you sweat. Take me where you go by your strength.
You have heard the scripture read in its entirety. I want to focus our attention on the signs, the miracles, the wondrous, miraculous powers, and the magic captured in verses 1-8. Hear the word from the Lord. Then Moses answered, "Suppose they do not believe me or listen to me, but say the Lord did not appear to you." The Lord said to him, "What is in your hand?" Moses said, "A staff." And the Lord said, "Throw it to the ground." So Moses threw the staff on the ground and it became a snake. Then Moses drew back. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Reach out your hand and seize it by the tail." So Moses reached out his hand and grasped it, and it became a staff in his hand again. So that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their ancestors, of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, has appeared. And the Lord said, "Put your hand, Moses, inside your cloak." And Moses put his hand into his cloak. And when he took it out, his hand was leprous, as white as snow. Can't make my hand turn right now. Then God said, "Put your hand back in your cloak." So he put his hand back in his cloak. And when he took it out, it was restored like the rest of his body. "And if they will not believe you," the Lord said, "or heed the first sign, they may believe the second. If they will not believe even those two signs, or heed you, you shall, the Lord said, take some water from the Nile and pour it onto dry ground. And the water that you shall take from the Nile will become blood on the dry ground." I want to speak from the title to you this morning, "From Rods to Snakes, Black Magic in the Age of Trump." I'm inviting us to be open to the word magic, to suspend judgment for a moment and hopefully beyond this moment. I'm inviting us to place the Egyptian and later West African understanding of magic on the same footing as miracles and signs performed by Hebrew priests, Levites, and Jesus, to give them the same benefit we give for the young folks in the room: Harry Potter, Dumbledore, The Hobbit, Glinda, the Good Witch, Yoda, and others. The magic in Exodus, as practiced in other cultural contexts, represents powerful symbols that can empower or embolden those who are vulnerable and those called to lead among them, to courageously work toward our shared deliverance. The same could be said today about the practice of magic. The intentionality towards enacting signs from God to aid us as a human community in our work towards justice and away from chaos and peace in the era of Trump. My use of the word magic is to move it from its singular or sole comportment as something negative, primitive, monstrous, superstitious, and evil, something that is against God and religion. I'm inviting us to suspend a common understanding that places magic in opposition to miracles and signs. An understanding that depicts miracles and wondrous signs as extraordinary deeds of the true God or agents of the true God, and magic as the extraordinary deeds of false gods or their agents. You see, regrettably, such views inform the early biblical writers and also interpretations of miracles, magic, and signs articulated in the Bible. Miracles and signs within the Jewish and Christian context is often depicted as something pure and good and holy and acceptable, an act of God for the good of the people, whether as a result of disobedience or a blessing. Miracles and signs outside of the Jewish and Christian context, namely those within the African context, are often cast as something sinful and wicked and idolatrous, the practice of false gods with a malicious agenda. Yet, when we conduct an historical read of the ancient world, that dichotomy, that contrast, that separation is far from the truth. Miracles, signs, and magic in the ancient world were sometimes synonymous terms, and terms with both positive and negative consequences. During Moses' time, the performance of magic was a common occurrence among all cultures. Egyptian priests were the most noted persons to evoke what we call magic, to empower the repulsion of harm, to heal ailments, induce love, produce rain, harm Egyptians' national enemies, and even enliven the dead in the afterlife. Often priests would use material and natural objects to call upon the spiritual realm or the unseen forces of nature to intercede in human affairs. Most often, Egyptian magicians were not charlatans engaged in a sleight of hand, but rather highly learned priests, masters of their ancient literary tradition and rituals of perceived power. They were considered elite religious practitioners, professionals with considerable abilities, and the prime players in major rituals connected to the House of Life, an institution of higher learning associated with temples. These priests presided over the opening of the mouth ceremony by which the deceased entered the afterlife as a transfigured being. Therefore, it is more useful to examine the acts in Exodus 4 from the perspective of Egyptian priestly rituals and the portrayal of priests in Egyptian literary texts. And indeed, when approached in this way, a number of striking parallels emerge. These parallels suggest that the three acts in Exodus 4, the turning the rod into the snake, transfiguring Moses' hand to an ailment, and turning the water to blood, were not merely random acts, but intentional acts of divine power. They were intentional signs that the people themselves were familiar with. God chose these signs to empower Moses to stand up to Pharaoh and other ill-willed leaders and assure the afflicted that God was with them. Such display assured Moses and the people that they were not acting alone or in vain in their quest for freedom and a better life. God was with them And as the late, great James Cone would say, God was on the side of the oppressed. God advised Moses on how to speak and garner the people's trust by imploring symbols that were consistent with the dominant belief system of the time, a belief system that was directly connected to Egyptian tradition. This included the people who were identified as Hebrew. How else would the people believe without a sign familiar to their own cultural context and their own religious tradition? For while their journey in Egypt began with Joseph, they had lived in the land of Egypt for quite some time. No doubt many of them shared an Egyptian ancestry or married across ethnic lines or adopted Egyptian customs and knew themselves, even in their oppression, as citizens of Egypt. They were Hebrew descended, yes, perhaps, but much of their worldview had become Egyptian. Therefore, God draws from Egyptian magic tradition when he advises Moses to perform signs using a snake, a skin element, and blood. These elements were no accidents of magic. They were, again, intentional acts to empower so that Moses could courageously go out, overcome, and win. These acts can provide us insight today in our courageous work towards a more just society. These acts can provide us insight today in our courageous work towards a more just society. So let's talk about these signs. So why the snake? The snake or the serpent is one of the oldest and most widespread mythological symbols. It is associated with some of the oldest rituals known to humanity and represent dual expression of good and evil. Since the dawn of time and on every continent, the snake or the serpent has been represented as having divine attributes. In ancient Egypt and other pre-colonial West African traditions, for example, when a priest or a leader was called to serve, he or she sometimes received their initiation or calling through dreams of snakes, or were engaged in a ritual process involving snakes. Part of the priest's initiation rites was to show their courage, belief, and commitment through casting down of their staffs or rods to transform them into serpents. Rods and serpents were intimately connected in Egyptian priestly rituals of power. We see here in the Egyptian tale of Pharaoh's chief court details some amazing deeds performed by priests or master magicians, which involved the manipulation of the natural world, such as the parting of waters or the casting of rods. Grabbing a snake by the tail, grabbing or catching a snake by the tail was a real occurrence and part of the initiation rites. Grabbing a snake's tail was the most dangerous place to seize a poisonous snake. Priests grabbing would say, as they grab, the snake is in my hand. Therefore, it cannot bite me. the snake is in my hand, and therefore it cannot bite me. This demonstrated the priest, the diviner, or the master magician's courage and strength. The sign of the snake in Exodus 4 tells us we, the called of God, must stand bold and courageous and without hesitation, just as Moses did. When we reach to grab the snake in our lives by its tail, we are assured that God is with us and will keep us from harm. When we reach to grab the snake in our lives by its tail, we are assured that God is with us and will not harm. Is that good news? I mean, come on, that's some good news. We are assured that the snake in our hand would not bite us because God is with us. We must heed the call to grab and act because history is calling us to task. How will you answer the call when the snake appears? Moses was tasked to go, stand, and speak without fear and face Pharaoh and the people with the assurance that they were not alone. You are not alone. When you stand, when you speak, when you vote, when you protest, when you march, do so knowing that Moses casting of the rod that turned into a snake was not a random act. It is your reminder that God is with you, and within you is an unstoppable power to transform and work towards the good of our nation. This sign, the sign of the snake, is your reminder that God, just as God guided others through their affliction in ancient times, God continues even to this day. But you got to look for the snake. Look for the snake. Now, some of you may be surprised that just not too long ago, the snake appeared. Mamba. You know who Mamba is, right? Who's called Mamba? Kobe Bryant. Plane went down. And it brought some of us to reckoning about why we're here. What is our purpose? Because in an instant, plane goes down and a snake appears to make you reckon with your own life. Look for the snake. God is sending us signs through the snake to be ready to act, to be ready to go, to be ready to grab, to be ready to speak. Another point of note about the second sign is the appearance of the snake to Moses also served as a link between the material and spiritual worlds. Egyptian and later other African traditions called upon ancestral spirits to aid the community in times of distress and to promote good health and the welfare of the community and family. Ancestor veneration revolved around family totems, an object or animal that served as a symbol to the family and a reminder of its lineage. The snake was a prominent totem, a creative life force symbolizing fertility, healing, rebirth, transformation, power, and authority. The shedding of the snake's skin was its promise from God of rebirth and endless renewal of life, even in the midst of evil. So when the rod in Moses' hand turned into a snake, it served as God's promise to the people to remain hopeful because restoration was on the way. Here we see the snake was not only a sign for Moses, but the people. The snake is our reminder to not lose hope and commit ourselves daily to the regenerative work needed for a nation and people in political transition. God needs you. God needs us. Look for the snake. In the second sign, Moses' hand was stricken and later restored, but why? What we do know is Egyptian priests were not only religious men with magical abilities, but oftentimes medicine men and doctors within the community who drew from the natural elements around them to heal the community. They possessed powers of healing and curses and threats. For them, science and the supernatural went hand in hand. Many Egyptian priests were knowledgeable in geometry, astrology, astronomy, philosophy, and mathematics. This sign becomes an important act to convince Moses and other religious leaders working for the afflicted of their own healing potential. But there is also something important happening here. There's also something else important happening here. What's happening here in this particular sign is not just a message to Moses of his own healing potential, but the healing and liberation of the people. What do we know is in Egyptian literature, common in Egyptian literature, blame for the evil suffered by the afflicted is often placed on the victim and not on the actions of those causing the affliction. A common case, we would say, in Egyptian literature of victim blaming. Those with severe skin conditions were often excommunicated, quarantined, and considered excluded from the afterlife. The disease that Moses had in his hand when he removed it from his cloak was not leprosy as we know it today. In biblical writing and in other ancient writing, leprosy represented a wide range of skin discolorations and lesions. In light of this, the sign of Moses being healed from a skin disease contained a message for the people. For the people who were afflicted, socially outcast, deemed other, or enslaved. You see, the message was clear. Their condition, their station in life would not last always. Healing and liberation was on the way. And more importantly, their oppressors would not have the last word. God would have the last word. Moses' diseased hand was a sign meant to inspire the afflicted to stand and reject their status. Moses and the people possessed the power, wisdom, and faith to transform their environment. Their goal was to believe in the possibility of their own giftedness and magic. Their goal was to draw insight from Egyptian lineages who had sophisticated methods of practicing medicine that combined the supernatural with the natural in order to transform society. Today, Calvary, God is calling us to stand, to push back on the policies and the current state of affairs that run counter to the welfare of U.S. citizens and the dehumanization of immigrants. The turning of Moses' hand into a skin ailment and back to wholeness is our sign. It's our sign too, that we possess the power, the internal magic to heal, to restore, and emancipate with the help of God and the spirit realm. The turning of Moses' hand is a sign to the U.S. president and others who bully and smear and mock and treat American citizens and immigrants as significant sources of inconvenience and trouble, that their day will surely come when history will call their actions into account and accountability. Yes. So what do we make of the third sign? To make it short and sweet, the magical act of turning the now to blood was common in Egyptian religious rites and texts. In the tale of the emperor, the writer laments about the chaos that has engulfed Egypt, saying, "The river is blood. If one drinks it, one will surely thirst for water." In another text, a demon of Beset. In this Egyptian text, the writer identifies one of seven demons of the goddess of Beset, who creates carnage in the now and thus turns the now to blood. And finally, in the third Egyptian text, the tale of the heavenly cow, the Egyptian writer describes how the goddess Ashekma wreaks havoc upon humankind, filling the now with the people's blood. In Egyptian culture, blood meant red, or red meant blood. And in Egyptian ritual practice, red was the color of the goddess Apep, the serpent of chaos, who was synonymous for evil. These three accounts of the now waters being likened to blood are metaphors for chaos and destruction initiated by conniving, narcissistic protagonists who sow division, lack empathy, seek retaliation, harbor hate, crave power, create chaos, alienate allies, and aid in the destruction of its own nation. Given this, from a literary perspective, the bloody now, this sign, marks an iconic reversal in which it is the leaders who experience destruction rather than execute it. More specifically, we later see that it is not the afflicted who drown in the Red Sea. Perhaps the turning of water to blood is a sign that points not only to the tainting of the waters by ill-intended leaders, but rather the karmic result of them doing so. As the West African Ifa religious tradition saying goes, my character, I know your importance. Please do not destroy my destiny. My character, I know your importance. Please, please do not destroy my destiny. When we view all three of these magical acts through the lens of their Egyptian and West African meaning, the question lies, what do we learn from them? What does all this mean? Honestly, I'm inviting us during these turbulent times in our nation to simply believe in your magic. To trust the signs from God that lead to rebirth, renewal, healing, hope, restoration, retribution, and justice. I'm inviting us to listen, to look for the sign, because God is calling us, as the ancient Egyptian proverb says, that every man and woman, every creation of God must act in the rhythm of his or her own time. I'm inviting us to answer that rhythm, to be the magic that someone is waiting for. In the end of chapter 4, Moses and Aaron become that magic. They're standing on the mountaintop as God instructed, and Moses tells Aaron all the things that God had instructed and how to perform the signs. And Aaron spoke all the words in verse 30 that the Lord had spoken to Moses and did the signs in the sight of the people. And guess what happened? The people believed. They believed. They believed when they heard that the Lord would visit the afflicted. And believing so, they bowed their heads and they worshiped God. I began this sacred moment with the clip from the film Daughters of the Dust. I chose this film because it intentionally moves us away from the stigmatization of magic exemplified in Egyptian religious practices and later West African traditional religious practices, and instead demonstrates these acts of magic as key components of Black people's survival and freedom. The older woman in the film, named Nana Pazant, created a charm. And this charm, she called a hand, an act of magic. And she put three pieces together to invoke this magic. The Bible, which represented a token of Christian redemption. A root, which was a supernatural emblem and touchstone to an ancient heritage. And a twisted coil that she wrapped around the Bible and the root, which was a lock of her mother's hair. Bound together, as you see in this photo, made these three elements, these cultural traditions that were significant to their spiritual vitality, made them inseparable, with each element illustrating the charm singularity of spirit and magic. What she and other enslaved persons called a form of black magic that served as a reminder of their lineage, their internal power, God's presence, and their fortitude to act. I'm inviting us not only to draw on the magic and signs during the ancient world, but the world of Nana Pazant. These signs, these miracles, these magical moments are within us, regardless of our social location. And they can embolden us, give us hope, and convince us that we can be victorious in the age of Trump. I am asking us to pay attention, to be ready, to stand and speak and vote and be bold and courageous in the age of Trump. Because at this moment in human history, I am convinced we need each other. And we need the magic that each of us hold inside to turn our present reality towards something beautiful and sweet and life-giving for all of God's creation. Ashe.